So I'm going to come down and walk around.
This is the
collaboration
counselors meeting.
The slides are here. I'm so excited. So that's going to help us with our talk. All right, I'm going to come down. I have to mute the mic because if I get anywhere near those stage speakers from the side, then it's just going to squeal and we don't want that. All right, here I come.
There's a slight delay.
And I cannot help but notice that the background music is still on. So from the sound, if we can get the background music back down, that'll probably help. Okay. I remember the first time I saw this illustration. This is from Carlos Moreno. He put it up on stage in a workshop where he was talking about collaboration within his neighborhood community in a big city. And when he showed it, I immediately noticed that there's somebody missing. There's somebody that's not on that illustration. And as he told the story of the conflict in his community and how they addressed it, I kept thinking about who's not there. See, there's me, and there's you, and there's us, but who's not there? You guys are all on board this morning. Awesome. Okay. Yeah, there's no them. There's no they. There's no somebody, because somebody ought to do something, right? Somebody ought to do something about that. And in fact, after showing this, then Carlos talked about that conflict in his neighborhood and what they did, which is that he got involved in this all-out Facebook brawl. You're making a face. You've been in one. So what happened is eventually he invited that other person, the person that was more or less they in this situation, out for coffee. And said, let's at least talk. So they sat down, they had coffee. I'm sure it was awkward. I'm sure it was really hard, actually. But what he said was, I realized we both cared about the neighborhood. We both cared about the community. And so from that point, they were able to find their own overlap, the point where they could be an us. And from that, I think that it's important for us to take for today that unless we actually try to find the us, it's not going to be obvious. We'll have to look for ways to connect with other people before we can possibly collaborate. Is it on? Where's the computer? Where am I supposed to be pointing? Or just advance, wave it around, he says. It'd be anywhere. You can do it. You're in charge now, man. Gotta clap twice. And we all say magically, it is on. I checked that. See, it's not just me. Okay, so we need to find our us. And we have two kinds of connection in our communities. There's bonding social capital, which is how we connect with people who are very much like us. That's bonding. And then there's bridging social capital, which is where we build bridges between two different groups, between people who are not necessarily like us. And that's what I have the hope for, because we can all do more bridge building in our communities. And it's really important that we do this, because it's possible to get bridge building very, very wrong. I'm a former city administrator for the town of Winoka, Oklahoma, population at that time of 993 people. So it was a bit of an adventure, and I don't know about you, but I was on the receiving end of some very serious implied physical threats. They never actually said it out loud. One more slide, please. There we are. Thank you so much, Don. And I've left it with implied physical threats. It sounds very menacing. I mean, isn't new. My own grandmother had her life threatened for teaching reading. So I'm sure that some of you have stories as well of conflict that has gotten very, very wrong. And so this is why I have actually done some reading about, like, how did we get there? How did we end up in these situations? And what really challenged me the most is when I read about why people join hate groups, violent hate groups. What were they looking for when they joined? And the answer turned out to be, when they were interviewed, that it gave them a feeling of belonging, a sense of community, and the satisfaction of meaningful work. For the most hateful things you can think of. And this killed me for a couple of reasons. One is, that's the very thing we're trying to provide in our communities. That's the thing we're working so hard to make possible, and people are finding it in the worst places. If we don't build better and stronger bridges, more people will turn to hate because it gives them that feeling of meaning. So in order to avoid that, then we have to do some specific things. Hey, this thing is working great now. All right. So I know that we run a survey of rural challenges, specifically for small towns. We've had over 2,200 people answer over the past decade, and they've told us about their own concerns in their communities. And no matter what the project is, they always tell us, our people are our greatest asset. And then in the next breath, they say, and our biggest obstacle is other people in our community. Money's up there, but I'm telling you, like, it's people who stand in our way. My co-founder, Deb Brown, was just in a workshop with Dakota Resources. They have a community coffee meeting. They were talking about collaboration, and people listed off the most common challenges to them collaborating, and it was silos and conflicts between organizations, resistance to change, generational gaps within the community where people don't really relate across the generations. And then there were transparency issues with different organizations. See, yeah, are any of these reasons surprising? No. These are things we're all dealing with. And I know it's not just small towns, because my friend Cheryl Lawson, who's from North Tulsa, told me that Tulsa is the city that builds silos inside of silos. So if that's not your city tagline currently, you might want to borrow it. Okay, so when we run our survey of rural challenges, we also ask them about how they see themselves, how they see the makeup of their community. And so they describe some things that you would probably expect, like race or color or ethnicity. They also talk about age and generation gaps. But there's also some things there that you might not think about, but that people described as being part of their community, and that was like family makeup, like grandparents raising grandkids, some things like that, and then military service, and, you know, so some a little bit unusual stuff. So what I would like for you to do for just a second is to think about a group from your community or a way you would describe yourself or someone in your community that's not up there. And I'll let you just like make a note of that right now. And if you have one that you feel is really super profound and you want to share it, then we have time so we can share. But think of a group or somebody that's not included on that illustration.
Dog owners.
Okay, so that opens up this entire realm of people with interests and activities and hobbies and how we can connect with people like that. You have one?
Homeless people.
People who are currently in a terrible spot, in a terrible position. You have one. All right. You guys are going to run my legs off. This is going to be great. I love it. So, Caroline?
Similar life experience.
And that is like everything up here, isn't it? Like similar life experiences, and there are other ones that are not up there. All right, we'll let you have one. Hold on. I have already seen that you're a card and likely to like tell a joke or like cut up. Is this true about her? Do y'all know? The entire room. Yes. All right. So, all right. You don't get the mic for the rest of the hour. Just one thing. One word? Two words.
Wheelchair.
Wheelchair.
Yeah, I'll be serious for here. Lots of talk about disability. Little of it covers physical wheelchairs.
Accessibility in particular, absolutely. Physical accessibility, right? I get you. I do.
Online access is the good deal, right?
Well, that's true because of the new rules. Online access is getting a lot of attention, but physical accessibility also a big issue. So we've got who's first? Okay.
Environmental
concern.
Golfers.
We're going to put that under lifestyle issues. Okay, this way, and
you have newcomers, but you don't have old-timers.
I know, and that's interesting that people talked a lot about newcomers to the community on our survey, but they did not mention people who have been here and have a longer tenure.
Regional
connections and disconnections across region, understanding each other, especially across a state like Oregon that has a wide diversity geographically.
Work.
Yeah, business, professions, and the industry. Is that what that says? Education. My eyesight. Don't make fun of me. Microclimates. Also, I heard rural and urban. But since our survey was all rural, then that's why we have all the rural stuff up there. So there's a lot of ways to think about ourselves and think about building bridges. All right. And if you wanted a copy of the slides, my number will be on the last slide, and you can just like send me a text or shoot me an email, and I will get them for you. So let me tell you about the people from Roanoke Electric Cooperative in North Carolina. So their CEO is, actually he started as a lineman, and he worked his way up. His name is Curtis Wynn. And when he became CEO, it was in the late 1990s, and the empowerment zones had just been introduced. And so empowerment zones were a new thing. And at that time, it included some, like, you got bonus points on grant applications for the federal, and like there was some funding tied to it, as well as tax credits. So there was lots of reason to be interested in it. So Curtis started pulling people together from across four different counties to work on that application together. And so across four different counties, so there were nonprofits, there were community-based organizations, there were education and hospitals and healthcare. Like, so he tried to pull together as much different representation from across all four counties as he could. Now, this is not an easy group to get together at one table and have a conversation about what they have in common. And so from that, what he realized is, now, Curtis said, it is practically gospel among the rural electrics that if you feed them, they will come. That's anybody. I know. But Curtis also realizing that these folks didn't have a lot in common other than they were in the same four counties, also added something he brought from church, which was fellowship time. Now, fellowship dinner is not really about the dinner, is it? It's about the fellowship. It's about talking to each other and connecting. And he built that into this group that was creating the application for the empowerment zone. And they called themselves the Roanoke Chowan Partners for Progress, because that kind of covered their entire geography. And they started meeting every month, and they're working on the application. They're finding chances to meet and speak to each other just as people first. And from that, they were able to find their own overlaps and their own us. And they got their application together, they sent it in, and spoiler alert, they were turned down. Now, what happens to a collaboration like this when the money doesn't show up? Dead. It's dead. That's the end of the collaboration, because the money didn't turn up. So what actually happened is that the people meeting, Curtis said it was too valuable to stop. Because they were really connecting with each other, they had found ways to partner with other groups, they were building initial cooperation and collaboration because they had met each other and they had the chance to actually build real connections. And they actually, just about 3 or 4 years ago, they added up how much money they'd built through their own connections, and it turned out to be more than the empowerment zone would have given them decades ago, which I thought was a great kicker to the story. And what I took out of it was that people have to connect as people before they can collaborate. We can't build a collaboration until we meet as human beings, until we find that space between us. So how could you add some fellowship time to something that already happens in your community? Is there a gathering or an opportunity where people could get together and meet just as people first? So I'll give you a second to write that down now. You can see those blue notebooks have been a hit. Y'all are using them. The reason that we want to have fellowship time and have the chance to meet each other as people is it helps us create an experience that's going to add up to change the way we act in our community. And we know that adults learn best when we have something that we have experienced that we can then reflect on. So like we do the thing and then we go think about it. And that allows us to then think about and learn from what we just did. So the experience helps shape our behaviors. And if we actually met with people who are different from us, if we did some bridging, then that helps us expand our thinking a little bit. And then if we played a role in it, then we have that ownership. Like I was part of that. And that is so much more powerful than I was just in the audience and saw it happen. So it's gonna be a real experience. You've gotta play a role, and all of that comes together with bridging between groups, and that's how we change the shape of our communities and how we behave with each other. And one of the things you can do about that is you can get out of the meeting room. And so I was working with Caldwell, Kansas, which has a population of about 1,000 people. And their hospital had built a new building at the edge of town, and this lot that we're standing on in the photo is the old hospital location. This is where the hospital used to be. They've already taken down the old building, done the environmental remediation, but they left the helipad. So of course, you know, I had to go stand on it because I'm really about 12 years old. And the two boards, and actually the lot is in two pieces, and so two different boards own the full lot. So this discussion at the board meetings, as you can imagine, went around and around of like, we have so much money sunk in this lot. We've put in so much expense. We should get paid back for that. If it's going to be housing, which, I mean, there's houses all around it. It would make a great spot for new housing. It's like a little river and some agricultural fields to the side. Great place for housing. It's already in city limits. But then they're like, well, where do we find a developer? How do we know we can trust this developer? You know, lots of concerns. And so those board meetings went round and round in circles for a long time as they talked through all of these concerns. And they couldn't get any forward motion. So a local CEO named Jill Keeney invited me to come and speak to a joint meeting of the two boards. And I said, I will not do it in a boardroom. Let's go to the site. Let's go to the actual lot, stand on the lot, look around, talk about it, and discuss the issues there, instead of sitting in the boardroom and going around the same conversational loop that everybody's been stuck in. And this actually changed the way they were talking. Ooh, you have two mics now for participation. We're gonna cover the world here. Okay, so this really did change the conversation. Suddenly we were able to ask some bigger questions about what would it mean for the community if we actually put new houses here? What would that do for our tax base? How much easier would it be for the hospital to do recruiting if there were new houses in town so that more people had a place that they could buy? So going through all of that, that conversation changed completely because we got out of the meeting room. So the experience changed the way people were thinking. And the other way you can change the way people are thinking is if you get the conversation and move it from online to offline. I'm not saying never go on Facebook, although that's probably good advice. But I am saying be careful what you put there and what how you treat it. Because the nearest big town to me is Alva, Oklahoma. It is like 10 miles from me. There's 4,000 people. And someone posted in the Alva Rants and Raves group, so you know it's full of all the good stuff. Poor gal, she posts in here with her love for the community. Look at the big heart behind it. I think Alva needs a dog park. And I looked at that, I don't even have a dog, and I don't even live in town. And I'm like, I think that'd be great, right? Like, I think it'd be good to have a dog park. There's lots of, who said dog owners earlier, right? Like, and here's some more dog owners, right? Like, I think it'd be good. Okay, what happened on Facebook? Here comes the negativity patrol. Bam! The top one. I took my dog to a dog park and he got sick three different ways. Like, actually, she says the first time, and then she says never again, which I found interesting. So anyway, and I mean, she lists three different diseases her dog got. I was like, that's a lot from one trip to the dog park. Is she possibly exaggerating? Possibly. And she ends it with the very reasonable, just bringing up the pros and cons. Thanks. Thank you. And then the bottom one. There's also another one that I don't have up here, which is the expert on dog behavior, who said, I am an expert on dog behavior, and I'll have you know that dog parks are a good way to start behavioral problems. I did not ask for his certification. He didn't offer it. And then we have this one at the bottom. Thank goodness that this person showed up, because otherwise nobody would have said the following that we always hear. What about And they always shout. She has three exclamation points. Three. So I feel justified in shouting that one. Somebody has to say it, right? Oh, my gosh. All right. So this made me feel bad. Like, would you blame the woman who posted about the dog park for never mentioning a dog park or any other new idea she cared about in this community ever again? I mean, that's nobody likes being treated like that. And it made me think of Heidi Johnson Timko from Churchbridge, Ontario. She had been moved for her job to Churchbridge, which is about 800 people in Saskatchewan. I said Ontario, didn't I? It's in Saskatchewan. Don't tell the Saskatchewans I got that wrong. So she's in Churchbridge, Saskatchewan, and so she wants to meet some people. Now, Heidi runs ultra long distance marathons. There, how many other ultra long distance marathoners are probably in Churchbridge? Zero. There's Heidi. She is the ultra marathon club. So she didn't start. Her goal was not to get her training. Her goal was to get friends. So she put on Facebook, hey, a friendly running club is forming. We're going to meet on Saturday at this location. Here's a suggestion of a route that looks like we could run it. So if you're interested, please show up or message me. Now, this actually worked. As of today, several years later, they have like 8 women who run regularly in Churchbridge in a town of 800. 1% of their population turns out for run club during good weather. I thought that was awesome. But I am sure that when she put that first post on Facebook, what happened? Do you think somebody like waded in there with, who do you think you are? You're not even from this town, right? You know somebody had something to say like that. That's a bad route. We can't go that way. Heidi said she was willing to talk about routes, though, but I'm sure somebody weighed in, right? But you know what they didn't do? They did not show up for Run Club, did they? The negative people, were they at the starting line going, no. Why? Because there's new things they can post on Facebook. They did not come for Run Club. And that's the secret. If you can, you may start it on Facebook to get people involved, but how soon can you move that into the real world? And then you can outrun them, right? Like, you can stand there and shout, but we're all going to go for a run. Run along beside. So the activities help outrun negativity. So, what is a conversation that you can move from the meeting room to on-site? Or from online to the real world? So at this point, I thought we would talk.
Go back.
Go back. Text me, I'll send it to you. Oh, it's already in the app. Good. I hope the formatting is better because my formatting was blown today. I don't know why. You never know. You can send the fonts with it, embed the fonts, but that doesn't mean the fonts will actually be nice when you get there. I always bring the PDF in case, right? But I'll send you the PDF. All right. Are we good? No, we're still writing. Okay. Well, we're going to talk. It doesn't matter what the slide says. We're going to talk. At this point, I wanted to give you a chance. We're kind of scattered out, but I want to give you a chance, first of all, to think of a specific thing going on in your community, someplace that you're stuck in a conversation or a conflict or something you'd like to talk about, maybe have some help with in your community. So I'll let you think about that for just a minute. Make a note on your favorite note-taking app, device, or paper notebook so that we have something to talk about as a group. Now, you don't have to share your idea with anybody. I'm just going to say that. I'm not going to make you share this. Are you all in conflict-free communities?
I got one.
Okay, we got a brave person up front who's like, come do my idea. All right. Oh my God, she has the shoes that match the suit.
My name is Michael Preeden. I'm the former mayor of Sisters. I'm still on city council. And you may have heard of our controversy in Sisters. We have a majority of city council that doesn't want a bull statue in our roundabout. We are a western town. It was incorporated in 1946. And I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm not saying that the people that don't want bull statues are bad people, but to not lean into the Western heritage of Sisters is a little off.
Bullheaded.
I used the word hogwash in a city council meeting and was talked to about it. But anyway, and it's not just the council, it's the citizens too, obviously. Somebody said longtime citizens or old timers, or was that you? Thank you for that. Sisters is one of those towns that's split right down the middle. We have people that have lived there for four generations and we have people that live there for 4 minutes. And they're all welcome. And everybody on council wants new people to come to town because new people bring kids and help the school system and new businesses and things. But when you get into an aesthetic area, like a piece of sculpture, a piece of art in a roundabout, it's amazing how polarizing it is. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not navigating it pretty well. Because I like to go on Facebook and say, I want this bull statue. And I get half the people that want it and half the other people that say that's a dumb idea. But anyway, so that's our situation in Sisters. And it's made the news, to be honest with you.
Okay, so she says, what do they want instead? Which I'm gonna take that question and springboard it and like let's spread that out. Is there only one roundabout in town?
Well, we have two, but one has art already, so.
What's in the other roundabout?
An elk.
We have an elk.
Or multiple elk.
We have multiple elk. That's very broad-minded of you. It's beautiful. He says it's beautiful. Okay. Is that the, are roundabouts the only place in town we can put art? No. As it turns out, there are other places we can put art. So I'm going to expand on your question. What do they want? Is there room in town to have more than one aesthetic or theme? We contain multitudes, right? Can the town not have places where lots of different types of art are represented? So that's kind of my question. So do they have a set theme that, do you want to elaborate more or shall we just pick on you?
You can pick on me. He said he was going to let me pick on him.
Honestly, we're starting a citizens art committee because of this. And that's not a bad idea. We want that. But there's also been rumblings that maybe we don't want them to decide this one piece of art. And I'm like, they're the citizens. Why don't we let them, you know? That's one less thing we have to do, actually. That's what I think. I'm like, let them pick it.
We are going to talk about how do we tap other people's energy and excitement and love for your community, even if they're not on city council or not currently formally involved in something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a formal citizens art committee who's going to decide. They're going to hold a vote. It's going to be really controversial. You know, I would be tempted to leave the roundabout for temporary installations for the next year and a half and just have a series of things that changes out that different people in the community can try and suggest and bring to the community. What do you think of that one? And that's going to push the controversy out by about a year and a half while we explore working together. That's what's happening. He said it was a committee. They're going to decide. I know how committees work. All right. You have a suggestion? Okay.
Well,
being on our arts committee for quite a while now, the arts committee doesn't make the final decision. The city council still has to approve the decisions. So there's a rationale and a recommendation. But I like the idea that you talked about as far as going to the place. And I think that there could be public outreach by the city staff, and people could fill out cards and talk about what they like and what they don't like about the particular art. And it might not only give good feedback to that particular issue, but also future art pieces that the committee would want to consider for other places and things that the community is ready for if they want to branch out from wildlife bronzes to more. That's what it sounds like. You guys have a lot of bronze or whatever. So just, you know, branching out a little bit to diversification without losing your heritage. And maybe there could be a way of having that conversation that way. That's what I would.
I like everything but the cards, because I just want to like hear people talk, and they'll tell you things that they'll never write on the card. You can do both. I'm just saying. Have the conversation too, she says. Is there an empty lot in Sisters? Are you from Sisters? No, she's just like throwing rocks at you from across the table. Okay, we're friends with Sisters, Sister Cities. All right, yeah. So, but if there is an empty lot, can we do temporary art there? Can we hand it over to different either organizations or individuals in the community and say, you have this lot for a month. Feel free to art all over it. And then, like, what are we doing? We're vetting ideas with the community. We're sharing different aspects of the community. And we're showing parts of who we are, but we're doing it in a temporary way and a very accessible way. I cannot sculpt a bowl to do in bronze. This will not be happening. Or anything else. I cannot sculpt anything for you that you would want to actually memorialize in bronze. But I can do other kinds of art, and I could maybe do something that could be displayed for a month. And then an organization that could never raise the funds to do a major sculpture installation can probably come up with enough resources to do 1 month on the empty lot. So that would be another way of helping broaden the discussion from, as long as the discussion is just for and against the bowl, it's a big fight. But when it's a whole palette of different choices, and lots of discussion and lots of opportunities for people to play a small but meaningful role, we're changing that conversation from for and against, us versus them, to there is some place that we all overlap, and it's because we love Sisters. Right? That's a suggestion. Okay, you guys want to do one more of these? Are you having fun? Somebody else have a conversation that you want to throw? Very cautiously. Go ahead.
What if you, So what if you have something that has come up within your city, which is a conflict that was started years ago, but is going through your community, and the city council is having to deal with it now, and they have no real ownership of it, and they cannot really change the avenue that it's going, but the person is still manipulating things within that town.
I think the key phrase there was the person.
Well, it's not just the person, but it's a percentage of the town, which is a minority.
And it's not fixable.
No, we're basically streamlined to go a certain way.
What's the conflict?
And there's no avenue out now. And right. It's costing the city an exorbitant amount of money that city has a hard time with its constituents that are going to be basically processed out of their homes. And the community is going to diminish because of the financial on the city and how it's going to dictate what that...
I feel like this is one of those situations where you can't reveal enough that we can work on it meaningfully.
No. But what do you do with when you have somebody that's, you know, put you on a path and and you have to get off of that path and move forward.
Yeah. And I don't know that we can make anybody do anything. So that's it. A, it may not be solvable at all. And B, let's talk afterwards, because there's nothing in this room after this session, but I'd love to talk to you and see if maybe there's something either you can share enough that I may find a hook for an answer or not. I may not be able to fix that one, because some of these things are just, it's personal, it's human, and not all of it is fixable, but we do have some suggestions. I'm gonna skip over that one because it's too simple. I want to skip ahead to one right here that I think kind of is half an answer to your concern. And this comes from Akron, Iowa, which is about 1,600 people. Like, they're under 2,000. Akron, Iowa. Not the famous Akron. This is the less famous Akron. And my colleague, my co-founder, Deb Brown, was working with this community. She was working with Mayor Sharon and a couple of city council members. And they wanted to, Deb was working with them on our idea-friendly method, which is what we're going to talk about at lunchtime. And so they were looking to tap the excitement and enthusiasm of the community for things they wanted. And so they did an ideas party. The reason I tie this to what you were just saying is that right now, that conflict is dominating discussion, and there's no oxygen left for anything else. And so the only hope to go forward is to find something positive that will pull enough of the other people along that it heads towards the future. I know that's not a great answer, but this is what we can do at the moment, and do come see me. So this is the ideas party, and this was so much fun. This is in Akron. They took sheets of paper and stuck them on dowel rods. You see the sheets of paper up hanging up? It's like a flag, and they called it the Plant Your Flag Party. So you could write your idea on one of the sheets of paper. It's above the table, and other people can come to your flag and go, oh, bread baking, I'm so in. Let's talk about bread baking, or whatever the flag was. In fact, that one was probably woodworking, because I know the guy in the black shirt is a woodworker. So from this, people could share whatever their idea was for their community, whatever they loved and enjoyed, and then other people could be attracted to it. And this actually generated a ton of great ideas, but they were not for the city to take and go store up for later. It was about tapping the excitement in the community for the community. And so people took their own ideas and went to take action. And the first one was the group of teenagers who revived the tradition of scooping the loop. This is cruising downtown, or car cruising, which doesn't happen that much anymore. Kids wanted to have a day where they could enjoy it, so they revived the Scoop the Loop. And the cool thing about that was the teenagers were the ones who started it because this was the idea they wanted to do, but like the gas stations joined in and started offering free coffee that night, so there was reasons for people to stop. People decorated their cars and cruised around. They did funny games like, you know, where you have to do the driver swap, open all the doors, everybody jumps out, you swap drivers. So they had a lot of fun. And that didn't need to be a city idea. The city didn't need to take that, take it back, discuss it, run it through the citizen engagement committee, decide whether to put it on the plan. They could just do it. They could offer resources. We'll speak with the police department to talk about traffic control and appropriate whatever. And so this is the kind of thing that I think can change the energy in your town. And it gives a lot of people a reason to do something that is not fight about the big fight, whether that's the bull or the thing that's tearing your community apart. You cannot drag people away from a conflict, but you can entice them towards something they would rather be doing. Okay. So, how much of this should I do? Given our time. Or does somebody else have a question that you want to talk about? A concern? Building the bridge. Yeah, let's talk about building the bridge. Let's do this one. That one? We'll start with that one. That's a good one. Okay, so this one comes from Douglas County in Georgia. And they are kind of close to Atlanta, so they are a larger suburb. They're like 140,000 people. It's the big town. And they do something different about the way they do their ribbon cuttings and golden shovel events. And I thought that might be helpful because y'all get sucked into this kind of thing occasionally. So what they do is they talk to the people who are going to be new to town and they say, we're glad you're here. What causes are you interested in? What things do you like? What are your activities? And then they, when they hold the golden shovel, they bring, who usually goes? Like the city is there, economic development. Same people, different day. Oh my gosh, you're right. The chamber, if it's a downtown thing, if you have a main street, that kind of thing, right? Like the usual people come to the thing. The legislators, if we can get on their calendar, we want them there. What Douglas County does different is they invite then the organizations in the community that are related to what this group of people is interested in. So in this case, this was Bang Energy Drinks had located a facility there in their county. So they were talking to the executives who would be involved and they're like, so what are the causes that you support personally and as an organization? And then putting that together, they brought those organizations there. They made personal introductions at the event. And that gave the starting point of a bridge. And then they made sure to follow up and say, let's build another bridge here, right? So they did. They made sure to bring the people together with the causes that they cared about in the community. And then, so I did want you to think about, is there an existing project that could serve as building bridges? And then I want to come back to who asked me to talk more about bridges. Yeah. And I would like, while they're talking, or writing.
Tell me a little bit more about what. I was just wondering, if you have a
Okay, so is it,
yes.
Tita just called me out because I keep saying, they did this. And I already said I wasn't supposed to say they, and here we are. Okay, so people did this, and then some other people did this. Okay, now, what people, I know, I need to specify. All right, and so do you want me to call you, Mindy? Mindy said, am I gonna answer? No, oh my gosh, no. All right, so Mindy's question is, when there is a conflict like this over here, when you have a conflict, whether it's the bull or something that's really tearing your community apart, how do you actually get people to come together and find your overlap? And there's really only a couple of ways to do that. Now, there are people who are far better equipped to talk about conflict mediation. And that's like an entire art. And what I can tell you is, much like what Carlos did with Tulsa, is reaching out to people and saying, I want to know more about what you care about and why you want the things that you want. So it starts with trying to understand what the other person is going for. And in the case of the far corner over here, I think for this conflict, I think it's become identity. I mean, I think they're wedded to that idea as who they are. And when it comes to that point, the only way to help someone get past that conflict is to help them, or you may never change that particular person who is on that side of the conflict, but you may be able to help people who are less deeply embedded into that conflict, help them find something else they are interested in and can be involved in. Because it's fun to get involved in a fight if you're that person that likes to get involved in a fight. But how can we involve them in things that they would like? So part of it is having positive things that people can be attracted to and attracting and enticing people from where they're starting. And part of it is reaching out to other people and saying, so what do you want from me? Here's what's possible now, what do you want now? And they will, other people at the other end of the conflict may not ever change. Have you ever said in your town, when that person dies, better things will happen? Am I the only one who's ever said this? We don't say it out loud. I am no longer with the city and I can say anything I want. Oh my gosh. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, there's no easy answers to any of this, and there's probably people in this room who are smarter about conflict resolution than I am. And maybe it's Bridget.
One of the things, I'm a community practice social worker, so maybe. But my thing with this particular piece is sometimes a lot of people hold values that are very unexplored even to themselves, and they operate very subconsciously, and they don't even know why they're mad, and they'll bump up against it. So I think that values conversations and ways of looking at the why, is this person, why am I thinking, and helping people say it from themselves so that people can find the underlying, just like we have vision statements, the underlying themes that everyone cares about, like everyone cares about the community enough to even be showing up to the conversation. And then that's the easiest one to identify usually. But then find, this one sounds really tough where people are at risk of losing their homes. And I don't think anybody, you know, in this room would want to personally toss somebody out of their home. So I think having those real conversations so that people can really think about why they're bristling and if it's safe, that the two sides can share and try to get more to it. But a lot of times it's ourselves, like, why am I so attached to this? Yeah.
I think you've got a really good point there, Bridget, about like we may not even be angry about the thing we're angry about. We're actually angry about some other stuff. There was a guy that Deb ran into, and he wouldn't let anyone rent his empty building. And when Deb went over and talked to him for a little bit about what was going on, he said, yeah, I tried to start a restaurant 40 years ago and the city council told me no, and so I will never let anybody put anything in my building. 40 years, that's dedication, people. So it does make me think that you probably want to get some outside folks in to kind of help buffer some of that conversation. I don't think you'll ever get past it with only local input. And I'm not even sure you can get past it. I mean, you look really like it's like really weighing on you. So I'm not sure that we have an answer for it. But I do hear it. All right, so back here. And we're coming up on our 5-minute thing, and I have like just a little bit to do at the end.
Same situation where I live, and it's kind of like a runaway train. They're not listening to what I'm saying. They're going to get the city into a lot of debt, and I'm outnumbered. And so what I've been doing is going over their heads and contacting, you know, ethics committees and things like that, and secretaries of state and, you know, the appropriate people. And also I've tried to garner some public support by very carefully wording my position on Facebook and trying to get, frankly, the public angry about it so that there'd be some sort of outcry. But it's funny, people are very strong-willed online, but when you get them in person, they just kind of back down. So I feel you. I feel like I'm bumping my head against the wall, and I just put my mind that either way it goes, I have a contingency. My it worked plans, you know, already. But for me personally, I don't want it. It's wrong, and so I want to make sure I am out of the loop and publicly stating online, you know, that I don't agree with it, so that I
ultimately we all have to make our own decisions as best we can so that we can sleep in. Okay, so the last thing I'm going to share is concrete. Yep, concrete. All right, so this is Concrete Washington. Y'all know where concrete is? Up north. Do you know where it is? I mean, it's kind of in the northern part of Washington. That's what I'm saying. But if you look at the mural in their downtown, it's on the city hall. It says, center of the known universe. So I'm just saying, it really is. Claim it, right? Like, lean into your heritage. Like, be the center of the known universe. So Concrete Washington, I was there, and this was more than a decade ago that I was working with them, and the Chamber of Commerce person said to me, I just found out the city's doing a thing next month that's totally going to be a duplication of something I had in plan for 3 months later. So it's like completely killed the project that she had started on. She said, how can you make them tell me what's going on? I'm like, well, I can't make them do anything. But on the spot, what I made up was, let's do coffee and calendars. I said, call the person that you speak the best with at the city and say, come for coffee and bring your calendar. And let's go over our calendars together. For just like reaching out as far, whatever you've got on your calendar, as far as you can. And then let's do that again in a month or a quarter, whatever works for the community. So this is actually what she did. And then it's also been done in tons of other places now. I just call it, because I have no imagination, coffee and calendars. And people are doing it all over. There's one place they did it, cookies and calendars, which honestly sounds more fun. But the key thing is you go someplace neutral. You cannot do this in the city council chambers. Why? Do what? It's a public meeting. There's that. If you need to post it as a public meeting, then go ahead. But do it somewhere else. Has the negativity seeped into the walls in your city council chambers? No.
No, not us.
No. All right, but some places it has. So don't go do it in city council chambers. Do it at the coffee shop where you can be friendly, where you can share with each other. And if you don't put any pressure on it, you can entice people to start collaborating with each other, because it'll just become obvious that there are ways they can work together. And so while this will not diffuse a conflict, what it can do is help bring people forward into more collaborative projects. Do not replace the calendar. Some people tell me they replace it with an online calendar. Everybody emails me their events and I put the calendar online. And that defeats the entire purpose, which is to get people in a room in a neutral location so they can talk to each other and find their S. So So there's that. All right, so if you needed a summary of coffee and calendars, there's a summary. You can take a picture and text it to somebody right now and start this in your community. And I promise it will help build some positive momentum towards working together with each other. It's the no BS guy up here.
Can you just expand the calendar idea? I didn't kind of...
Okay, so come for coffee and bring your calendar for your organization. Whatever you have on your calendar, like events that are coming up, projects you're working on, and just share what's going on. So this one that happened that was in the city council chambers that I showed, they found out that there was an organization from the Health and Human Services area that had like an entire daycare support plan that they would loan money to people who were starting daycares, help them get their training, help them buy equipment. Nobody knew about that until they went to coffee and calendars and shared that as they went around the room. So it kind of looks like this where you just like sit down. And so everybody go, well, you just go around the room, informal, and just share what you're doing. I've seen it done where you've got like an agenda. Everyone has 2 minutes only. You got to be on time. They're in alphabetical order. If you're not there, we're going to skip you. Don't do it like that. Like make it more like friends meeting it for coffee and just sharing what's going on. Does that make sense now? Okay. So that's what you do. You go over what you have on your calendars and then you repeat it. And if it works once, do it again. Okay? Any questions about that? Yes? I'm hauling your way. Hold on.
A slight correction. Even if it doesn't work the first time, do it again. Okay. And I have a quickie here. This is only partially a joke. Be careful, if you attach a piranha to a boomerang, it will come back to bite you.
I'm gonna be thinking about that one for the rest of the day. All right.
I've done my job.
Oh, all right, the Winston News. All right, we're gonna talk. Don't leave, we're gonna talk. Okay, so that's everything. I do wanna give you, like, there's my contact info. See, I told you it didn't, my formatting's off. Becky@saveyour.town is my email address. Feel free to email me if you want a copy of the slides or to ask a question. And that's my phone number, you can text me. Don't call me unannounced because I'm too young to like answer the phone and call unannounced, but you can send me a text and we can talk. The first 10 steps thing with the QR code, you don't have to put in an email or anything. That's saveyour.town/first10steps. The first one is coffee and calendars. So if you wanted a pretty version to like hand to other people, it's a PDF and you can give them that part of it. So I'm gonna leave that up there. So I do, what, do you have one last thing to add publicly?
I wanted to ask you if we haven't covered conflict in the city council.
Okay. Right, and I'm out of time. I'm a minute 24 over. So I don't have any magic answers. I'll just admit that right up front. The same answers that work with other human beings also work with council members. But the more you can make it informal and happen not in the council chambers, but at the site of the place, whatever you're talking about. And you gotta pull it. You gotta pull it into the real world because Facebook stuff will just kill you. And here comes the meeting organizer to tell me to shut up and sit down. I have more time. Okay, so this room is actually empty for the next hour, so if you are not actually going to be doing something else, I will be here also setting up for the keynote, and I'm happy to continue conversations with you individually. And I want to hear from City of Winston. This is yours?
Yes.
So we're going to talk. But thank you all very much for leaning into the very thing that we're trying to model, right? Like, that's what we just did here, is trying to find our us between very different perspectives and very different people across the room. So thank you all for what you do for your communities. Finding those bridge building opportunities is the most meaningful thing you can do. Thank you very much.